Bonnie Nadsem's first novel, Lamb, won the 2011 Center for Fiction Flaherty Dunnan First Novel Prize and was adapted into a film by Ross Partridge. Lamb was followed by her second novel, Lions, an epic story of a declining small town in rural Colorado, plagued by ghosts that come in many forms. She's also co-author of Love in the Anthropocene with environmental philosopher Dale Jameson. And her third novel, titled 31, is forthcoming. And she's in town as an EWU visiting writer. Bonnie Nadsem, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I want to start by talking about your most recent novel, Lions. The book opens with this stranger coming to town, and he dies mysteriously. He drowns in the water tower, and that sort of sets off this string of events that sort of unravel the town, it seems like. So he becomes this sort of ghost figure for the people in the town. And so one of my favorite parts of the book is later when his sister shows up and is like, he wasn't a ghost. Like, this is my real brother. So was that an intentional thing of sort of like, I don't want to say manipulating, but manipulating the reader's expectations?
Yeah, very. It was very intentional. Okay. And I worked that on many different levels. Lee's perspective is what we would call a close third, but it melds so seamlessly, I hope, with an interspersed omniscient narrative that the reader can mistake her close third for reality and so be as mistaken about what's happening as Lee is and have that, you know, corrected by the end.
And speaking of point of view, so you do sort of shift point of views between omniscient and mostly close to Lee and sometimes with Gordon, who's her boyfriend, who has a very different perspective on life in general. And I wanted to ask specifically about Gordon's point of view, because one of the sort of mysterious things in the book is he and his father both go off into the woods to be alone or to maybe take care of a ghost character. And it's very unclear to the reader throughout the whole book what they're actually doing up there in the mountains. So that seemed like a tricky line to walk in terms of point of view, because you're slipping into Gordon's point of view, but you don't want to reveal to the reader everything that he knows, right? So how did you manage that?
Yeah, that it was a very tricky sort of space to navigate. But there are moments when Lee asks him straight up, tell me the truth, what are you doing up there? And he tells her the truth and thereby tells the reader the truth, but neither the reader nor Lee believes it.
Right.
When the truth comes knocking at the door, you know, we say, go away, I'm looking for the truth. And I don't want it to look like you. So that was one of the ways that I navigated that space, was to have, you know, Gordon actually speak what was happening.
Before we move on to talk about your other writing projects, I'd love to hear you read, just so we can get sort of the sound of the prose, because it's beautiful. I mean, the opening line, as it should in any good book, sort of sets the tone of the story that's about to come.
I hope so. Thank you. Yeah. If you've ever really loved anyone, you know there's a ghost in everything. Once you see it everywhere. It looks out at you from the stillness of a rail-backed chair. From the old 1952 Massey Harris pony tractor out front, its once shining red metal, now a rust-splotched pink, headlights broken off, no eyes. Picture high plains in late spring, green rows of winter wheat combed across the flat, wide-open ground. The derelict sugar beet factory, its thousands of red bricks fenced in by chain link clotted with Russian thistle. Farther down the two-lane highway, the moon rising like an egg over the hollow grain elevator, rusted at its seams. To the north and west, the sparsely populated town, golden rectangles of a few lit windows floating above the plain. They called it Lions, a name meant to stand in for disappointment with the wild invention and unreasonable hope by which it had been first imagined, then sought and spuriously claimed. There were never any lions. In fact, there is nothing more to the place now than a hard rind of shimmering dirt and grass. The wind scours it constantly, scrubbing the sage and sweeping out all the deserted buildings and weathered homes, clearing out those that aren't already bare, flat as hell's basement and empty as the boundless sky above it. The horizon makes as clean and slight a curve as if lathed by a master craftsman. Nothing is hidden, and yet.
That was Bonnie Nadsem reading from her novel Lions. So usually when I'm preparing for an interview, I'll read some of the author's work and sort of prepare myself. And that's what I thought, you know, I was like, oh, this is the most recent book. I'll read that one. And so I did. I read it over the course of 2 weeks. And then like 2 days ago, I was like, oh, I might like read a couple pages of her other book just so we can talk about it. And I finished it in two sittings.
A totally different book.
It's such a different book. And can you talk about just the process of writing two vastly different novels in terms of structure and perspective and scope? How is the writing process different?
Actually, much like your reading process, I wrote Lamb. I wrote an initial draft of it. I was still in that workshop space. I was working on a degree at USC. And I don't know why I did this, that I was just going to follow all of the rules and bypass all of my philosophical questions. I wasn't going to write anything smart or interesting. I was just going to tell the story. And turns out that's really what people like.
Right.
And of course, I had to try to subvert that with Lions by saying, I know all you want is a story, but I'm not going to give it to you.
Right.
So it was, so that made it easier too. I wouldn't let myself get hung up on anything complicated other than the characters themselves.
Right. So we should back up and say that Lamb is about a middle-aged man who becomes infatuated with an 11-year-old girl and sort of deludes himself into believing that he's doing her a favor by showing her the world, when really what he's doing is kidnapping her, essentially.
Right, yeah, and she's all for it.
Yeah.
She's sort of a neglected kid and thinks, oh, here's somebody with money who's acting like a parent, who's, and it's not, I mean, I don't know if this is a giveaway or not, but it's really not Lolita. It's not a book about pedophilia. In fact, I think it's in some ways more insidious than that.
I think so. I mean, David Lamb, the middle-aged man character, is a much more complex character, I think, because he's not a pedophile. He's not really, he's not preying on her sexually. He's emotionally attached to her in a way that feels really authentic and terrifying, because it's really damaging, I think, for both characters.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, of course, more so for the child, because she's a child.
But right.
Yeah, he's definitely destroyed by this experience in ways he doesn't expect to be.
Right. And you said it was also made into a film.
Right.
So what was that experience like of seeing these characters that you created in your head and put on the page turned into, you know, film characters and acted out by real life human beings?
I mean, for the most part, it was just something to celebrate and really great, and sometimes quite tedious, because I'd never known this before, but when a scene is filmed, of course, this makes sense. It has to be filmed looking at Lamb, and then refilmed with the exact same dialogue looking at Tommy, and then refilmed again looking at both of them, and then refilmed again with the, you know, the sound and the boom being moved all around in different ways. So there was the tedium of it, but then there was this moment where we were all packed into a little bunk room, and it looked exactly like I had pictured it when I was writing it, and it was just this crazy moment of, this is three-dimensional and we're in it. And how did this happen? And this, like, suddenly the world wasn't reliably distinct from fiction anymore. Like, if I stepped out of that bunk room, what was I going to find? Was it going to be Wyoming, or was it going to be like the landscape of my childhood in Cleveland? It was very weird.
And so you are working on a new book. It's titled 31. The number?
Yep, the digits.
Yeah, the
31.
Digits. So any teasers that you can give us about that book or when we might see it?
I'm finishing it up, and I didn't know when I started writing it, but it's sort of like a 21st century Frankenstein. So again, very different from Lamb, and then, you know, another 180 away from Lions.
Neat. Well, we'll look forward to that in the future.
Thank you.
My guest has been Bonnie Nadsem, who is the author of two novels, Lamb and Lions, as well as co-author of Love in the Anthropocene with environmental philosopher Dale Jameson. And her forthcoming novel is titled 31. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much again.